Welcome to the Strivecast, bringing you conversations with people from your running world. Strivecasts are brought to you by Strive Trips, a unique program for high school and college student athletes, offering summer programs with a focus on real community service and high-altitude athletic training in Peru and Kenya. For more on Strive Trips, or for more Strivecasts and blog, visit www.strivetrips.org.
Okay, so it is the 16th of October. I'm Tyler Andrews. I'm here with David Wilder. We're going to talk about this week in running news, in the running world. It is a rainy morning here in Boston. And yeah, lots of good stuff to cover from this weekend. Dave, anything you wanna start off with?
Yeah, it's been a great week. I talked about the foliage a little bit last week, but last week was nothing compared to this
Yeah,
week.
It's really peaking now.
Oh, it's really peaking now.
I think last week we were actually not even into peak. We were pre-peak.
Pre-peak.
We're probably just about peak.
It's like when you're at conference, you have a great race, and you're like, wow, I'm really peaking now. But you're not even at your peak yet.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, let's talk about the Chicago Marathon, because to me that was the biggest news from the weekend. I got up and watched the stream and was a little disappointed in the coverage, but overall, I mean, it was a great race. We could complain more about the coverage later. But first, let's talk about the running, because that was really exciting. Obviously, a great duel, though not really the duel that we expected, which I think you had said last week was kind of likely to happen. You know, when you talk about these two-man duels, a lot of the time they end up not being the two men that you expect.
Obviously, a great prediction by me.
By you, Ken Nisa.
Yeah.
So for those of you who missed our podcast last week, we did a little preview at the very end, and I took the Ken Nisa Bekele camp, and Dave took the Eliud Kipchoge camp. And for those of you who don't know, Eliud Kipchoge did win the race, and Ken Nisa finished, I want to say, fourth? Fourth?
Yeah.
Fourth, yeah.
A distant
fourth.
Kind of embarrassing for
kind
you.
Kind of embarrassing for me. I'm not a gambler, and I'm that's probably a good thing. Anyways, so let's talk a little bit about that race. I mean, it was not a world record or even a course record like they had kind of talked about. But I think, you know, Tony Revis really said it well in the commentary, which was, you know, in the later stages of that race, that like that's almost what makes it the most compelling, is when, you know, they kind of throw the watches out the window and suddenly it's all just about beating the other guys to the line. So, you know, there was this, for those of you who didn't see the race, there was a three-man pack kind of in the last, I don't know, 10K or so. And to me, Kipchoge just looked so easy and relaxed. You did watch the race, right?
Yes, I did watch the race.
I don't know if you got the same impression, but I was just watching it and I was like, wow, he is like jogging right now. And then,
And then he wasn't,
but then no one else could keep up with him.
Right.
Yeah. I was pretty sad to see Wesley Carrier fall off so early. I think that kind of was my only correct prediction from last week, which was that as much as I love the guy and he does amazing work both in athletics and now in politics, it's really hard to do both of those things. And, you know, we talked about Haile Gebrselassie being able to kind of manage his whole business empire while running, you know, 204, 203 in the marathon, but I think he is a bit of a freak in his ability to do that. So I think, you know, if you can watch the movie Transcend, which is a documentary that just came out about Wesley, I would first of all, I would really recommend it, and also you can kind of get a better sense of what his priorities are like, what his life is like. And there's a really cool quote from an interview with him at some race in that movie, where a reporter is basically asking him, are you working on getting your American citizenship or something? Which I'm not really sure what inspired her to ask that, but she does. And he's like, no, not really. I'm actually trying to get into politics in Kenya to try and help out people there. And he says, for me, running is like a stepping stone. It's like a means to an end, basically. And he seems to really be following that path because, now his life is more about politics, it seems like. It's not as much about, winning world marathon majors. I mean, he's still a really good runner. He ran even 2:11 in Chicago, but I think his if he's using that as a stepping stone, then I think that that phase is basically passed.
Speaking of guys who ran 2:11, Bobby Curtis also ran 2:11. That was a PR for him, and that's really awesome that he ran a PR, and it's a good time. And I also think it shows that he still has a lot more in the tank.
Yeah, I'd
For the,
agree.
like, he has a 27:24 10K PR, which is really fast. And faster than some of the other Americans who've run similar times in the marathon. And so hopefully.
Well, and also I think it's worth commenting, his 5K PR is 13:18. So 27:24 is, in my opinion, a lot better than that.
Better than
So
13:18,
it
yeah.
seems like he's getting better as races become more endurance specific. But I mean, again, he ran 2:16 in his debut. So for a 27:20 guy, that's pretty bad. So it seems like this is just, it's taken a few swings at it, and I think that yeah, being able to run under 2:10 is probably in his future.
Right, yeah, we were looking at what his PR at 10K might translate to, and hopefully he will be able to get that sub 210. He's headed in the right direction.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, he finished in the top 10. He was in 9th place overall. So definitely no slouch there. Very impressive time. I think it puts him probably in the top 5 times by US guys going into the trials at this point. Off the top of my head, I think probably Ritz, Ryan Vail, Cabeda might be faster, and Eggleston, maybe. Can you think of anyone else? I would have to look
No,
into
I
it.
don't know.
And then another Hanson Brook guy, Jake Riley, was just behind him in 11th place, 2:13. He's only got a 28:08 10K PR, so I think that's a lot closer to his ability, but still really good. One guy I was kind of looking for, and then looks like he had kind of a rough race, was Christo Landry. We talked about him a little bit last week. He's really been tearing up the U.S. road scene. He set the U.S. 25K American record, and he's talking about running like 2:11, and he looks like he had a pretty rough second half. He says he went out in 66:05 and running 2:14, so that means he ran like a 68-minute second half.
Right.
So, looks like he's still got some figuring out to do there.
Yeah, overall message, the marathon continues to be tricky, elusive
Yeah, for the
for
American men.
many Americans. Yeah. And you know, it happens, it doesn't, it's not only Americans, it happens to athletes from other countries, other parts of the world, including East Africans who have a tough time transitioning to the marathon.
Yeah, so we just there was also a headline that was where was it? I think it was Komen, yeah.
Leonard Komen, former world 10K
World
road best holder, and
and 15K world record holder.
there you go,
41:13, that's really fast.
and has not been able to figure out the marathon.
Yeah. He just ran his first marathon in Eindhoven, where he went out in 63 minutes, which is 2:06 pace, and then ended up running 2:14. So he ran a 71-minute second half, which is 2:22 pace. So yeah, the marathon is a tough beast. It can be for all of a lot of people. It can take a few cracks before you really sink it in there. Other storylines, the women I think did pretty well. American women, Amy Hastings was in fifth place with a 2:27 big PR. Or sorry, she tied her PR. And she was actually leading the race through the first 10K, which is kind of interesting. Wonder, if she was, just running her own pace, if she was kind of even and the pack behind her was trailing and then accelerated or what. But yeah, she was 9 seconds ahead of the pack at 10K. And then she kind of stayed with them again and got dropped and came back and got dropped, but she still managed to hold on. And this is her first, the first 10K or first top five finish since 2010 by an American. So pretty great there. And then we had a slew of other American ladies right behind her. Clara Santucci in sixth, Sarah Crouch in seventh, Melissa White in ninth, and Lauren Jimison in 10th. And then Lisa Uhl, who was on the US Olympic team in 2012, was making her debut here. Said she was shooting for about 2:37, but faded again, kind of struggling with that last 12K, and ended up running just under 2:41. And for the record, she's really fast. I mean, she's run sub 15 in the 5K and 31 minutes in the 10K. So she's the real deal. So I think, it sounds like with a little bit more experience, more marathon specific training, she could be taking a lot of time off that PR there.
Yeah. So speaking with having difficulty figuring out the marathon, the camera crews are continuing to have difficulty figuring out the marathon.
Yeah.
The critical thing if you're a cameraman is, of course, to get the all the decisive moves. So most of the time you're watching a marathon and it's just a group of people running, same pace, they're just running together, they're just covering distance. Nothing is really happening. And then there's a few times when there might be a surge, there's a breakaway, maybe even someone like messes up a water bottle, or who knows what happens. But there's these critical moments that change the race. And the American TV crews continue to completely miss those moments. And it's a real contrast. We watched the Berlin Marathon from a German stream, and we saw all of the critical moves.
Right, they pretty much just showed the men's elite race
Right.
when
And
it was going
it
on.
was awesome.
It
It
was
was
great.
really fun to watch, to see all those critical moves. And in Chicago, they blew it. We didn't see the breakup of the pack. We didn't see Kipchoge making his decisive move. And yeah, it was really disappointing.
I think that the difficult thing is providing a broadcast that is interesting for, people like us and people that are listening to this podcast, and also appealing to, like my mom, like people who are just like watching TV that don't really follow running, and the thing is that I think that if they were able, like Tony Revis, for example, is a great commentator, and he's really good at like making like a really compelling race compelling to people who like aren't huge fans of track and field, and I think that what we need is like more of that. Like you can hear in his voice the frustration with the pod with the broadcast. He's like, ah, like, and we missed the men's break again, but
I think what needs to happen is he needs to have a live stream of the whole race. Maybe
right.
we should have that as a split screen or as picture in picture the whole time.
Yeah.
But at the very least, he needs to have a live stream of the whole race, and he needs to have a button where he can, like, switch the coverage to the race at any time and start commentating.
Right.
So if something starts to happen, he clicks the button, we switch over, and he starts commentating on the race. Because then we can do other stuff, but we're not going to be missing the move.
Right, exactly. And I think, like, in this day and age where everybody's watching it online anyways, like, to me, the best solution is, like, you know, either you can do picture-in-picture, or you can literally just have, like, okay, here's the feed from the lead vehicle. Like, you can watch the television broadcast, you can watch the men's lead vehicle, you can watch the women's lead vehicle, you could have all three of those up on your screen at once if you want. And that way, like, even if the main broadcast isn't showing every second of the men's race, like, you can still, like, that feed is still there.
Right.
It's still going somewhere, right? So why not just put it on the internet and let people watch it?
Like, right, the and they're paying to have that feed.
Right, right, exactly. So, like, the problem is that, like, people, I mean, to them, like, people like us aren't, you know, the marathon has become such a thing that it's not as much about, like, the elites racing, right? Which is unfortunate, but I think it's true. It's more like, okay, this is like a huge spectacle and a parade. And
well, to me, it's also a bit of a chicken or egg thing in terms of when you stop providing the good coverage of the elite race, who could possibly become interested
right.
in it?
So it's, yeah, it's like a self, it's like a vicious cycle. Self-perpetuating.
Right. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, right. Because, yeah, once, and, like, it's just, it was, like, so stark that the contrast between the Berlin coverage and this coverage, because, like, you know, anybody, I feel like anyone could have watched that race in Berlin and been really excited by it. And, like, it didn't even have commentary. Like, it was in German, right? Like, it was just us watching it. Like, if, like, but just, like, the way they presented it, the way that they showed, like, okay, like, this is, they're showing every single kilometer split. They're, like, you know, you can see every move that's being made. You can see every surge. Like, that's what we need to see if we actually want people to be interested. But the problem is that it's moving farther away from that. And like you say, it's self-fulfilling in that people, the less they show that, the less interested they're going to be, and then they're going to show less, and then people are going to be less interested, and then they're going to show less, and then people are going to be less interested, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, yeah, it's frustrating. I don't have a great solution. I mean, the problem is that these, in general, I believe these are all basically, the rights are owned by specific networks.
I think we've just given several great solutions.
I guess I don't know how to implement those solutions. They just need to hire us as consultants. That's what needs to happen, right?
Yeah.
So one last thing I want to talk about from Chicago is talking a little bit more about Bekele and his performance there. So I think this was pretty disappointing for him, and I think most people were relatively disappointed. Let'srun.com kind of gave us, like, the silver lining stats, comparing him to Paul Turgot and Haile Gebrselassie in terms of their moving up from their first two marathons after their track careers, and obviously both of those guys were super successful in both track and marathon. And yeah, so they point out, so Paul Turgot's average first two marathon times were 2:08:35. Haile's first two marathon times averaged out to 2:06:27, and Kenny Sabahele's first two marathon times averaged out to 2:05:27. So he's a minute faster than Haile and over 3 minutes faster than Turgot. But I don't really think that that's that relevant a comparison.
No, neither do I.
We're in such a different era.
Yes, it's the post-Juan Giroux era.
Yeah, we're in the post-Juan Giroux era where suddenly, you know, if Paul Turgot had run 2:08:35 in his first two marathons now, then everyone would be like, why are you even running the marathon?
Right.
You know, I mean, Mo Farah ran 2:08 in his first marathon, and it was looked upon as like a huge disaster. And now he's not running the marathon anymore. Like, that's... yes, 2:05:27 is a lot better than those guys, but you also have to look at, like, what were their times relative to times that were really good at those, when those times were being run. So what was, you know, what was a world-class time when Paul Tregat was running 2:08 mid? It wasn't 2:03.
Right.
You know, that's the problem is...
And good times had come down significantly even in between Tregat and Gebrselassie.
Right. And Gebrselassie's time came down a lot from Tregat's time, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm bummed. I'm disappointed. I was a big Bekele fan in his golden years on the track. And I guess I'm still kind of holding out hope. You know, it's like we talked about with all the Americans and stuff that sometimes you just need to figure it out.
Yeah, so you could say, well, since Gebrselassie, the world record has come down a minute, and Bekele is a minute faster average.
True.
So relatively speaking.
But I also feel like there are a lot more times that are closer to the world record now than there were when Gebrselassie was running.
Yeah.
There are a lot more guys who are capable of running close to the world record.
Right.
You know, it's like you were saying in the average for... The average halfway split for London, Berlin, and Chicago this year was 61:40, which is world record pace. So there are a lot of guys that are trying to run that fast.
Right, which I think actually makes the marathon a really exciting, compelling event in running right now, because it's getting the top talent. There are tons of guys ready to run fast. The moves they put on are just spectacular and brutal. And everyone's still in this stage of, like, showing everyone else up. And, yeah, I don't know. I just think it's a really exciting thing to watch right now. Like, the, you know, 5K, 10K on the track used to be really exciting to watch back in the era of some of these guys. And now I think, you know, the marathon is really the marquee event. You still get I would say that the 1500 and the 800 are still extremely exciting.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's like the marathon is where it's at.
I think my analogy would be that the 5K and 10K is kind of like watching the NBA. It's like the last minute of the game is like really exciting. And the rest of it is just build up. It's like, okay, we're just getting to the last minute and then we're going to have all the fun there.
Right.
But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what to think about Bekele. Maybe this isn't his game. Maybe he's out of his league at this point. I don't know. But I'll still root for him.
Okay.
when he's coming back, I'm sure he'll do something in the spring. So I'll keep cheering for him.
Personally, I do not expect him to be a marathon great. I do expect Kipchoge to continue to be one of the best marathoners.
Yeah.
But Bekele, I think, you know, he's clearly good. But I don't see him becoming a marathon great.
Yeah. And then one last thing about Chicago is a quick shout out to Rita Jeptu, who has been on fire now for the last 2 years. So she won Chicago this year in a relatively slow time. I think it was 2:24. And then 2:24:35, and she won Boston this spring in 2:18:57, which is the course record at Boston. Really fast time there, especially like no tailwind or anything. She ran 2:19:57 last year in Chicago, and she ran 2:26:25 to win Boston 2013. So she's now won Boston and Chicago for 2 years in a row. So she's won four World Marathon major marathons in 2 years, and she locked up the title for this block of World Marathon majors. So not only did she win $100,000 for winning the Chicago Marathon, but she won $500,000 for winning World Marathon majors. So she's doing great.
Which, for anyone who doesn't know, is
Yep.
a points-based competition that goes in a 2-year cycle. So basically, you earn points by doing well in the major marathons, which are Boston, Chicago, New York, London, Berlin.
Tokyo.
And Tokyo is one as well?
Tokyo is added now.
Okay, now Tokyo is one. You earn points for doing well in those. And the one who has the most points at the end of 2 years gets a $500,000.
So she's locked that up now, and cannot be dethroned. So congratulations to her. She's really killing it. And then I wanted to kind of lead into another discussion. There were, I feel like every fall and spring, the mainstream kind of media, whenever there's really fast marathons run, either if they're talking about the world record or world record set, there is just a slew of articles about the 2 hour marathon, or I guess the sub 2 hour marathon, the 1:59:59 marathon. And some of them are really silly. I think some of them are kind of insightful. Sometimes it's interesting to get the pros' takes on it. There was a great quote from Bekele who said, quote, "A human being cannot go that fast. If the scientists create different human beings, then maybe." So he's kind of on the negative side. And then on the other side is there was an interview with one of our favorite runners, Haile Gebrselassie, who said that we might see a sub 2 hour marathon in as little as 10 years.
Right.
So even amongst the pros, the guys who are, the ones that are actually close to this level, there's a ton
So,
of disparity.
and my response would be they're both right. They're both right. Bekele is thinking about on our current courses, with our current weather, with our current shoes, and our current pacers. And the current like kind of stochasticity of all of those things that we're probably not going to run 2 hours. But maybe Gebrselassie is thinking about the unknown. Like
Right.
what can we change? Well, what if we, like Tyler and I were talking about, what if we made a giant track and ran the marathon on a giant
Right, a
track?
5 kilometer track, 5K around.
Yeah, would that knock off a minute just in one fell swoop? And if you make changes like that, what if there are a lot of things that you could possibly do? Running surface, shoes, drafting.
Well, I think one of the huge benefits of the giant track idea is that you're not running any extra distance. You can
Right.
run a whole marathon in lane one and not run an extra inch. I mean, even a course like Dubai, where there's like 4 turns on the whole course, you're still gonna end up running a little bit farther. And when you're talking about seconds, like those little bits add up,
And what if we run, what if we have like a straight course somewhere, and what's the maximum allowable tailwind
Well,
for,
the world record has to be on a loop course.
it has to be on a loop
Has to be on a loop
course.
course.
Okay. Well, what if we have a loop course where you run out into the wind with pacers blocking the wind, and then
And
you run
back
back
with a tailwind.
with the tailwind?
Right.
Does that legal? Like, can you cut off another minute just by doing that?
I think that's possible. I think that the question is, like, are we What's going to have to change to get to that point, because right now mo I feel like there have been, if you look at times coming down in other events in the mile or something, you can see huge effects from things like synthetic track surfaces, from lighter, more efficient spikes, stuff like that. So, at some point, are we going to see a whole marathon run on a track surface? Like, what if, even if we don't have our giant 5K track idea, what if they literally laid out 3 meters wide track surface on all of the Berlin course, for example? Like, how much is that worth right there? I think it could be significant.
Right. And we're talking about, we don't have that many courses that are set up specifically to be really, really fast.
Right.
And if we did that, we could, again, make probably some quick progress. And now all of a sudden we're looking at, instead of having to get 3 minutes better, we're only having to get maybe 1 minute better.
Right.
And then maybe it is possible within 10 years, like Gebre Selassie said, versus 3 minutes better fitness-wise, maybe is not going to happen for the foreseeable future, just like Bekele said.
Okay, that is actually all we have this week because unfortunately, as you could hear, there was some noise outside that was starting to get into our recording, so we, being podcast noobs, moved our setup into the back room and unfortunately disconnected our microphone. We're going to try and bring you the rest of that discussion on the sub-2-hour marathon in the coming weeks, or coming week. But for now, we just wanted to get this published as quickly as possible, to keep everything relevant. So that's all we've got for this week. Look forward to more. We actually have a really awesome interview coming up with another pro. That's way better in terms of recording quality than Marielle's. I'm not gonna trash talk Marielle because she's awesome, but it's a really awesome interview. It should be coming out later this week too. So stay tuned for that, and we'll have another week in review coming up next week as well. So thanks for listening, and until then, keep running.
Thanks for listening to the Strivecast. This podcast was brought to you by Strive Trips, with hosts David Wilder and Tyler Andrews. Produced and edited by Tyler Andrews. For more on Strive Trips, or for more Strivecasts and blog, visit www.strivetrips.org.